This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Federal researchers recently reported the first broad national picture of progress against some of the most devastating complications of diabetes, which affects millions of Americans, and they found that rates of heart attacks, strokes, kidney failure, and amputations fell sharply over the past two decades. Well, here with more on this is Dr. Ruth Weinstock. She's professor of medicine and the division chief of endocrinology, diabetes, and metabolism at Upstate Medical University, and she's also the medical director of the Joslin Diabetes Center at Upstate. Welcome, Dr. Weinstock. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So rates of some of these really serious complications from diabetes have declined. Tell us about that. What were the biggest declines?
So the biggest decline was an approximate two-thirds reduction in heart attacks, what we call acute myocardial infarctions and death, which is really, you know, wonderful news, quite striking results, and a 50% reduction in stroke and amputation. There's also a 30% reduction in end-stage renal disease, that's kidney failure.
Before we go on, that's staggering, and I want to go over all of those in detail, but let's review the numbers in general in this country. How many Americans now have diabetes?
Over 21 million Americans have been diagnosed with diabetes, and there are many more individuals who probably have diabetes but are not yet diagnosed.
So they're kind of, are they pre-diabetic or they actually have the disease?
Well, there are a huge number of people with pre-diabetes, way more than have diabetes. But also, unfortunately, there are people who don't get regularly screened for diabetes and have diabetes and don't know it.
Are these largely people with type 2 diabetes? I know I read somewhere that's the type that is often related to obesity and the more common form of the disease. But there is type 1 and type 2.
Yeah.
Are they both growing?
They're both growing, actually. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. It has its most common onset in younger individuals, but adults can also be diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, even older adults. So people with type 1 diabetes, their insulin-producing cells have been destroyed by autoimmunity, and so they must take insulin.
So they're totally insulin-dependent.
Exactly.
But the type 2 diabetes, which has been mostly in the news.
Right. So type 2 diabetes is what's been associated with obesity and sedentary lifestyle, and those individuals may be able to prevent or at least forestall the development of the disease with diet, exercise, weight management, and can be controlled, many of them, with oral agents or injectables, although about half of adults with type 2 diabetes also require insulin.
But those people with type 2 diabetes basically usually acquire it as a result of some of these things we talked about, lifestyle choices, weight.
They probably have a genetic predisposition to develop the disease. Family history is a huge risk factor. But in those who have that genetic predisposition, when they become overweight or obese and become sedentary, they need more insulin to keep their blood sugars normal. And if their insulin-producing cells cannot do that, they develop diabetes.
And I've heard even children these days can begin to develop type 2 diabetes,
yes,
which I thought was unheard of in a way.
Yep,
at one
we
time.
Have some preteens and teenagers with type 2 diabetes.
Wow. And you also mentioned that there's a large number. I read a statistic that was staggering. 79 million Americans have pre-diabetes. That means that they're on the verge of developing it.
Yes, so that means that their blood glucose levels, which is blood sugar levels, are above normal, but not yet high enough to be considered to have the diagnosis of diabetes. So they are at greatly increased risk of developing diabetes.
Let's go back to the complications or the reduction of complications over the last two decades. What is this new data that they've just put together? Tell us about current diabetes treatment. I mean, are we being better at treating the disease and hence less complications?
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, the good news is we're better at treating the disease and preventing complications. The bad news is more people have the disease, so
exactly.
The burden is still huge for the country. But we are much better at controlling blood sugar levels, and that is directly related to the development of many of these complications. But we're also much better at treating other risk factors that we know are related to development of complications. So, for example, the use of statin drugs, which reduce the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, is thought to be playing a major role in the reduction in heart attacks and strokes we're seeing. The use of ACE inhibitors, which is a type of drug that's used for hypertension, also is helping reduce end-stage kidney disease. So there are other medications, not only blood glucose control, blood sugar control, but also attacking blood pressure and other metabolic abnormalities such as cholesterol levels that are important. In addition, for the amputations, I think we're much better in educating people with diabetes on how best to take care of themselves. That's so critical. Not just lifestyle, but also in terms of the amputations, inspecting their feet, how to take care of their feet, how to prevent foot problems, how to recognize an early foot problem so it could be treated, and thereby preventing a major foot problem that could lead to amputation.
So education plays a huge role in
all
of this.
Huge role. At our diabetes center, we have classes, we have nurse educators, dietitians. It's a whole team approach to help people learn how to best take care of themselves.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Ruth Weinstock, and we're talking about the decline in serious complications from diabetes over the past 20 years. Another piece of this in terms of education is also the fact that doctors are more willing or more able to track patients over time and to keep on top of their blood sugars and what have you, and make sure that if they go off track, that they go back on track.
There have been a lot of advances, a lot of technological advances that have been extremely helpful. Better ways of for the patient to monitor their own blood sugars, use of computers, use of phone apps to help people with both lifestyle change and also to track how much insulin they're taking or what their blood sugars have been.
How about
the electronic medical records also, which help healthcare providers better track all these different risk factors and medications that patients are on and things that lab values that need to be optimized with different medications.
So less falls through the cracks in that respect.
And there's also less smoking in this country. So smoking is a huge risk factor for vascular disease, which can affect the heart, the stroke rates. And so I think the fact that there are more smoking cessation programs and that healthcare providers are very active in trying to help their patients now stop smoking is important.
How did they put this data together? They were looking at data over the past 20 years. Where did it come from?
These were statisticians from the Centers for Disease Control that have access to databases that cover the whole United States, and they actually use four different databases: the National Health Interview Survey, the National Hospital Discharge Survey, U.S. Renal Data System, and the U.S. National Vital Statistics System. So they had access to nationwide data.
And this was important, I think, because in a way we really do need some kind of a checklist or a checkpoint to see how we're doing. Because as you said so eloquently, the good news is we are reducing complications, but we are also increasing the numbers of people with diabetes. So over time we really do need to continue to track.
And the burden continues to increase because of the great increase in the prevalence of diabetes, both in the U.S. and worldwide. But as more physician practices and provider practices have electronic records, I think we'll have even better data as the years go on.
What role has the pump? People actually can have a pump physically inserted?
So the insulin pump is used mostly in type 1 diabetes. At our diabetes center, over half of our children and over half of our adults use insulin pumps. And it's an insulin delivery system that allows more precise delivery of insulin during the day and night. We also have continuous glucose sensors now that can be connected to the pumps that are particularly useful for people who have wide fluctuations in blood sugars, especially in people who have a tendency for their blood sugars to go too low, which is a huge problem in particularly people with type 1 diabetes who've had it for a long period of time. And the most recently, and actually we did some of this research, is a sensor that talks to the pump. So this is actually, we're very excited about this. There's the first insulin pump now where if your blood sugar goes low, the sensor detects that, the pump will stop infusing insulin. So it's been shown that you actually spend less time hypoglycemic or in blood sugars that are too low, particularly when you're sleeping.
That's very exciting.
So there are a lot of very exciting new developments.
And that's never used with people with type 2 diabetes?
Well, actually, we are involved in a research project for type 2 diabetes with insulin pumps, as well as continuing our research in type 1 diabetes with pumps.
I found it noteworthy that the researchers from the Centers for Disease Control estimate that diabetes and its complications account for $176 billion in medical costs every year. That's a staggering number.
It is, and that doesn't include all the other ancillary losses in terms of quality of life and lost work days and other problems.
So what's the takeaway in terms of what we are doing at this point? I mean, and do you also see some other breakthroughs on the horizon to help reduce this burden?
So there are a lot of exciting areas of research right now. We are working on an artificial pancreas project with other diabetes centers.
What does that mean?
So we want to try to be able to really control blood glucose levels in people that require insulin therapy, so they won't have to worry about how much insulin to inject, about their sugars going too high or too low, but that there would be a pump and sensor system that would automatically give them the right amount of insulin so their blood glucose levels always stay in the correct
range. So it's the next level up from what you were just describing.
Oh, yeah, actually several levels up.
Several
but
levels
we're making,
up.
We're every year we're trying to get closer and closer to that goal. There are other new drugs for type 2 diabetes. Huge amount of research on prevention of diabetes. Clearly, you know, we want to better manage it and cure it for the people who have it, but we want to prevent it.
So where is the key then, or the magic bullet for prevention? I mean, when you talk prevention, what are you talking about?
So there is, I don't think there's going to be one key, because diabetes is quite heterogeneous. So type 1 diabetes, for example, which is also increasing every year, and is not associated with the obesity epidemic, that's more of an autoimmune disease, and that's going to be hopefully someday a vaccination. It's going to be an immunological intervention to prevent that disease, we hope. Type 2 diabetes, we do hope that healthier lifestyles can help prevent or forestall the development of the disease. There may even be some environmental toxins that are related to development of all types of diabetes, and that's something that is another area of research.
Or even a change in our environment, like getting rid of the high fructose corn syrup that's mm-hmm. in every product on the market. Things that are actually adding to our weight gain, that kind of stuff.
And possibly some chemicals, possibly bacteria. I mean, there are viruses or a variety of
possible
areas of research.
Well, you are doing a lot of clinical research. In the little bit of time we have left, how can people get involved if they want to?
So please give our clinical research unit a call at 315-464-9007, and we'd be happy to tell you about the different types of clinical projects that are going on for both type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
Wonderful. One, thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Ruth Weinstock, Professor of Medicine and the Division Chief of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at Upstate Medical University, and she's the Director of the Joslin Diabetes Center at Upstate. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.